60,000-watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 20th of May, Anno Domini 2007, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we're bringing you news, views, stuff you can use. It's going to be a beautiful day in our neighborhood. Yes,
should we
sir.
Say anything to Jim Sammons, who just left and left his email account open, that we could send some real nice messages
I'm telling
out?
You,
I mean,
send some real nice messages. Send some more mail.
Yeah,
send
some more out here and just
that'll
say
be
it's,
good.
And it's all from Jim Sammons.
And it's all from Jim Sammons. Folks, when you're done using your email, particularly if you have it on a public machine, it's probably a good idea to close it out when you're done.
Well, I see this a lot. A lot of folks will go to different, even at the library, they'll log on to their Yahoo account or anything else or
and
different
leave
places
it up. Yep.
And leave it up.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes you can even just hit the back button a couple of times and you're back into someone else's email.
Yep.
So be very careful when you're on a public computer.
Right. Always shut out, not only close out your email, but also shut the browser down. All right, Dell has confirmed rumors that it will build tablet PCs. They confirmed that on Friday, that they'll be making them before the end of the year. Jeff Clark, Senior Vice President and General Manager of Dell's Business Product Group, made the announcement in a short video posted to the company's Direct to Dell blog. "I'm here to end much speculation in the industry about our plans in the tablet marketplace," said a casually attired Clark while holding the tablet. "The device will be a Latitude tablet PC designed specifically for the education, healthcare, and corporate markets," he said. On the video, Clark gave a brief demo and offers a few details. "It will be one of the lightest tablets on the market. It will have a pen and touchscreen interface." He demonstrated how it will open like a notebook and will have a screen that twists and shuts to become a tablet, just like every other tablet.
Yeah. See, those twisty things really concern me. How long before the wires break?
Yeah. I've got one that
we
bought a couple years ago.
Are they wires or are they just contact points?
Well, see, that's been a problem with laptops over the years. You open and close that lid enough, those wires break.
Yep. Both Intel and Motion Computing recently announced a slate-style tablet PC specifically for the healthcare field. It's priced just over $2,000. There's no real word on what this Dell product is going to cost. I got to tell you, I've used tablet PCs for a while, and for general everyday use, the whole tablet thing just doesn't work for me. There's very little that I do in a tablet mode. Now, for the healthcare industry or any other industry where you have custom built like web pages or applications, where you got the tablet in your arm, you click something, you check something, you do something else, that works. But just to take regular notes, still, if you're going to send them on to other people, you're either sending them gigantic graphic files that they have to be able to decipher your handwriting now, or you have to write slowly and clearly enough that the handwriting recognition software, which you use afterwards, by the way, not during the actual writing, that stuff will work. So it just becomes an annoyance, as far as I'm concerned. For most people, it's just a annoying.
We see a lot of use of tablets in the graphics industry, which is big on the Mac, for graphic artists.
It's a lot
easier to draw with a pen than it is with a mouse. Wacom, depending on what you like, makes these really neat Cineq monitors, where it's a monitor, LCD monitor with a tablet built in. So you're actually drawing on the monitor.
But that's a problem, because if you're drawing straight up like that, eventually your arm gets really tired.
Well, they come on.
You want to bend it down so it looks like a drafting easel.
They basically do lay flat, have a little riser on it. So those are neat. And there is a company making a tablet Macintosh. It just doesn't happen to be Apple. it's the Mod had that book, and they introduced it at Macworld, and it's shipping now. Just over 2,000. They take an existing Apple MacBook laptop and pull the regular screen off and put a tablet screen on. So there is a solution for tablet Mac owners as well, if you want that type. And it's just really neat for drawing on. Freehand drawing is just much easier with a pen.
Yes, if you're doing freehand drawing, if you're filling out specialized pre-created forms, that sort of thing, they're perfect for that. But for day-to-day computer use, I just don't see them. They're way more annoying than anything else. People who use them tend to end up using them in regular laptop mode 99% of the time.
I've heard and read editorials about that. The paradigm shift that we'll have to go through, because we've been using keyboards in front of monitors for, 40 years now?
Yeah.
And we just assume that's the best way, because no one has really figured out a better way yet. And even if they do, how much inertia is there going to be to replace that?
Right.
In fact, the multi-touch interfaces are starting to get common. Well, not really common, but starting to come out.
Right.
And so now you can have a soft keyboard. That's one of Apple's features in the iPhone.
Right.
That you can reprogram your keyboard to do whatever you want based on the mode that you're in. So if you don't need a keyboard now, it's not in your way, and you can bring your tablet over. So it's what's the next better human interface for the computer going to be?
Yeah, I don't know. It's one of the things that I've seen that I really liked was a little program where there were letters down each side of the screen, and you used your stylus to sweep a letter into the middle. And then statistically, the most commonly used next letters would appear on the other side.
Right.
You'd sweep one in from that side, and same thing on the other way. And eventually, you'd build the word that way. And I watched a guy who knew how to do it, effectively typing, as it were, 90 words a minute.
Yeah.
And then, you hit the middle of the screen when it predicted the right word, and it would just... It was astonishingly fast.
And that's basically how the iPhone interface works. You get a QWERTY keyboard, but it... Right. Depending on, if you have fat fingers, you don't have to worry about hitting the right key because it predicts what it thinks the next key is going to be. And it was pretty good once you get the hang of it.
Right.
So if someone can come up with the next better computer interface, so we're not stuck. See, how many billions of dollars are lost in carpal tunnel and repetitive strain injury issues every year?
Right. Well, that's going to be that's going to be voice recognition.
Yeah, we had voice recognition like Star Trek had 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah, except theirs was, I don't know if you knew this, but theirs was fake.
Fake, yeah.
Yeah, we're trying to get the real thing now.
It was actually the producer's wife. She needed a job.
Yeah. Right, it was Majel Barrett eventually, right?
Yep.
All right, let's go to the phones. Our first caller is Henry from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Henry. What's your question?
Hi. I'm getting two problems with Firefox. One problem is unexpectedly it'll just I get a message saying Firefox has to shut down, would you like to report this problem to Microsoft?
No, it's probably Microsoft. Not reporting it to Microsoft.
Yeah, Microsoft don't care.
Oh, you might be. It might be a Windows thing saying a program has had to shut down. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, does it say it had to shut down or it's going to shut down?
Has to shut down.
And so before it crashes, you're getting a message? That's nice.
Well, it just stops. The interface stops responding, and then I get that dialog box that comes up saying it has to shut down.
Hold on. Right.
Hang on. This is my fault, Henry. Hang on. We'll be back in just a couple minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, Henry from Brighton, and all of you at 15 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Call Wham now.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 19 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites, and we are on the line with Henry. All right, Henry, you're having Firefox problems. Sometimes it shuts down.
Hello.
Hi. What operating system are you running?
It's Windows XP Professional.
All right. And is there any sort of pattern? Is it's specific pages or?
No, it's it just seems to happen at random. The other type of issue that may be related is sometimes I'll just try to start Firefox up, and I get the message saying that it's already running. So when I go into the task manager, indeed I can see that Firefox is a process that's running. Why it is, I don't know. When I shut it down, that is, I just disable that process, I can then restart Firefox.
Yeah, some other things are running in the background that's not releasing Firefox when you go to shut it down, and it's trying to still run.
Do you have any extra plugins installed, like the Yahoo toolbar, the Google toolbar, or anything like that?
I do have the Google toolbar, yes.
That could definitely be a problem.
There's specifically a problem with the Yahoo Mail toolbar that I found on Mozilla's website.
Yes, and have you done any of the updates, the Windows XP updates lately?
I do them regularly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what version of Firefox are you running?
It's the latest version.
2.2.
Let me just.
Yeah,
2.0.0.3.
Yeah. It could be one of several things,
I'm almost wondering, do you know what updates you've done recently, or do you just have it automatically do it?
No, I have it prompt me, and then I do the updates immediately.
And when, do you have Internet Explorer 7.0 on there?
I have it on there, yes.
And how long has that been on there?
Well, I forget when the last update was done on that, but it's been there for a while. Okay. I rarely use it.
No, because the reason I ask is I noticed there was just an article out recently how the update for Internet Explorer 7.0 was, that was trying to fix a fix, is now causing issues with some computers.
I see.
Yeah, sometimes updates break more things than they fix.
Yeah, so if you're not using Internet Explorer 7.0 and you'd like to use Firefox, you might want to try to uninstall.
Can it be uninstalled?
Uninstall IE 7, it'll take you back to 6.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How much memory do you have in the computer?
About 750 meg.
Yeah.
He's good there.
Yep.
I would try that because if you are doing all the updates, like I say, I've got a bolt in here that this patch that was supposed to fix the patch before... isn't, and it's causing some issues. I had one client literally did the update, and all of a sudden the sound went on his machine and couldn't burn CDs, the patch was working fine.
So uninstalling 7 will get me back to 6.
Yeah, exactly.
Give that a try
and let us know.
And check Google to see if they have an update to their toolbar, too.
Yeah,
sure.
Because I'm seeing notes around the Mozilla Zine groups that... some of these extra toolbars can cause Firefox to grab too much memory and then cause it to crash.
Yeah, and don't want to let go of it when you shut them down.
Right, so check that out and let us know. Thanks, Henry. Our next caller is Bob from Geneva, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Well, my CRT blew up the other day, and I'm going to take the plunge and get an LCD, but I'm confused about monitors. What, the square one versus the widescreen? Because the resolution, I was looking at my video card, and it's a ATI 1650, and it covers the resolution on the square one, but on the rectangle widescreen, it's 14 by 900, and that's not on my video card.
Yeah, some of the older video cards don't support the wide monitors. Yeah. Wide monitors are fairly new in the last couple of years. A lot of people like them because they give you more screen space. Especially to have a web browser on one side of the screen, your email program on the other side of the screen, so you just have more screen space. It was typical a few years ago to have two monitors to be able to have this much screen space. So now the widescreens are getting a lot more common, and it's also nice for watching widescreen movies. But you do have to have a video card that supports those resolutions.
Yeah,
because I have a DVD player, and I thought, well, this would be great. I'd get one and watch movies and do my photos and things like that on there, but...
Well, you just have to get a better video card.
Yeah, you either find a monitor that has resolutions your video card supports or get a different video card.
Okay. So one versus the other, the square one compared to widescreen, there's really no difference?
No, just you wind up with more on the screen.
Yeah, the widescreens are going to cost a little bit more because you are getting more screen space, but that's, you're getting more, so you're going to pay more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that should do it.
Well, you got to weigh out, you're going to get this new video. You're going to have to get a new video card, and now it goes back to how old's the machine?
You might as well get a new computer while you're at it.
Yeah, you're going to weigh out the things for right now. If all you need,
and you're going to need a new house to put it in, and you got to buy a new car to move it.
Yep. Well, the old CRT lasted 10 years, so I figure everything else should last 10 years too. But.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, that solves everything.
So. All right, there you go, Bob. Thanks.
It's a vicious circle. It just keeps going around and around and around.
Yep. Our next caller is Walter from Greece, New York. Welcome, Walter. What's your question?
I have two Ubuntu Linux software questions.
Sure.
First one is that we're using Ubuntu Dapper, the long-term form.
Right.
And we use Firefox. And when we go to a website that has these Dancing with Stars that's kind of local, we can't see anything from it.
Yeah, here's the thing. what you need to do is to install, it's probably Flash.
Yeah, see, this isn't necessarily an Ubuntu problem. It's a browser problem, and you need a media player for the type of media that site is using.
Well, right. We've updated to the latest Macromedia Flash and still get nothing. And we wonder if it's a Wave, you know, a Microsoft Wave or whatever this file.
Right. It may not be Flash. I haven't gone there myself. I don't know. But here's the way that works. You go to administration under system. You go to administration.
Yeah.
And you run the Synaptic Package Manager, and you're going to have to put in your password. Yeah. And once you're there. There are a couple of things you want to look for. Certainly Flash.
Yep, we have that.
But the other one is W32 codecs, I think.
Okay.
I'm actually looking for that right now. And that's going to take a little while. There's almost 20,000 packages in Ubuntu that are all free, so.
Okay, because there's some of these codecs we've heard are illegal to use in the United States, and we are just kind of afraid to.
They're illegal to distribute.
Oh, okay.
In the United States, but that doesn't mean that they aren't illegal to use. They just can't be distributed. So if you want them, you have to go get them on your own.
Okay. So we'll look for that W32 codec.
I think that's what they're called.
Okay.
You also have to make sure that in settings, once you're in the Synaptic Package Manager, in settings. Repositories, you've got the 06 updates,
yep.
Security updates.
Yep, we have all that.
You should have Universe,
yep.
All of those things.
We do. Which then brings up, this, instead of Synaptic Package Manager, this is my second question. We've heard about a software called Automatics, which is supposedly is much better than the Synaptic Package Manager. Have you used that? Are you aware about it?
I have used it in the past, and what it does is it adds all of those repositories and a couple of others for you.
Beautiful.
And so Automatics is available and downloadable. It's a pretty neat product. But if you've got Universe and all of that stuff, you should be able to find what you want listed, and so that should give you all that stuff. But if you don't, certainly that whole Automatics thing will do it.
Marvelous.
And it does look like those web videos are in Flash format. I'm there now. How come you weren't in that, Ratchet? Nick?
Do I look like I dance?
Yeah. Lansbury just got eliminated in the fourth round.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah. you could have danced with Lansbury.
I could have danced with Bob.
Oh. Did you see the look on Rob's face? Oh my God! There's a sight to see.
No,
Bob
no.
and Nick here again.
Certain things the eyes should see, and there's certain things that should.
You know, there are websites where that would be a hit.
Yeah.
All right, we got to go take another break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes, Walter. I hope that answered your question. Listen, do that whole Automatics thing. That's actually pretty nifty, and it should bring you up to date. I've been running long-term support version of Linux for a while now on most of my servers, certainly, and on my desktops. I'm slowly breaking down and upgrading them to 7.04 because there are just some neat things in the new stuff that's fun to play with. And if you don't need long-term support, live on the cutting edge. But if you want to be stable, then the 606 long-term support is terrific. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Mr. Rob Linton. I'm Nick Francesco. Glenn Lamberts, the mighty Glenn Lamberts, is in to give you the news, views, stuff you can use, all the weather and sports and the stuff you really listen to Wham for. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Take it away, Glenn.
Looking for weather, traffic, sports, and more for your drive home? It's the Wham 5 o'clock news hour, weekdays 5 till 6 on Wham.
Well, we're moving on now.
We're moving on up.
To the east side.
We're moving on up.
To a deluxe apartment in the sky.
What if I don't want it, Glenn? Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton. Why do I have a sneaking suspicion this show now has an R rating for the rest of the hour?
Now, which one of us is George and which one of us is Wheezy?
You know, they don't make... You know, I'm sorry, they
you
do not...
You two can fight over that. I'll just stay neutral.
Wheezy's on another station.
They do not make television shows the way they made the
they
Jefferson.
They couldn't make television shows like that
not
anymore.
A chance. Do you agree, Glenn?
Well, there's no question. I don't know if that's good or bad. They don't make it the way they
are. Right. You know, well, like Archie Bunker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, that was a classic show. There were some lines in there. You know, I judge a show, a television show, by the lines that people remember from the show.
Yeah.
You know, that's the show where the line, excuse me, came from. Yep. You know, so anyway, that's it.
Well, I always got a kick out of the bit where Archie's arguing with Mike and, you know, Meathead, you know, that's where that term came from, and,
right?
You know, claiming that he's bigoted and hates everybody, you know, and lists off all the races and whatnot, and then it gets down to goldfish. I bet you even hate goldfish, and Archie, I don't hate goldfish. They're cute. They swim around the bowl, and long before you're tired of them, they die.
Yeah. that. Well, okay. Now we've named two television shows that you remember the lines, and you know, of all of the people to play that role. You know, Carol O'Connor. I mean, he couldn't be more opposite than,
well,
than
and,
that.
Well, and up until that point, he'd been a serious dramatic actor.
Sure.
Yeah, then he was on that cop show after that, and I couldn't watch it because I can't see Archie Bunker as a cop.
Exactly. That one that was like down in Mississippi
in the
or something. Phony accent.
But another good one, Sanford and Son.
Son, sure. Yeah.
I'm coming, Elizabeth.
Right.
This is the big one. Yeah. All right, back to this computery stuff. Apple has been hit with a class action lawsuit followed by MacBook and MacBook Pro owners who are unhappy with the quality of the displays on those notebooks. The suit accuses Apple of improperly playing up the capabilities of the displays for the MacBook Pros and MacBooks launched in the first part of last year. For example, it notes that Apple advertised the MacBooks as capable of displaying, and I quote, millions of colors, when they can only do that with a technique called dithering. Also, it points to complaints lodged by MacBook users on various Mac discussion boards about the grainy or shiny quality of their displays. The plaintiffs claim that those display problems are not visible when they boot Windows XP on their Intel-based MacBooks and MacBook Pros, suggesting that Apple's operating system is to blame. The suit was filed in San Diego County in the State Court of California. So we will keep track of that and see where it takes us. Steve, do you know anything about what's going on with that?
Not exactly, but most of the reports on the internet are saying, don't all marketing companies say their products are the best? And does that mean everybody could sue everybody?
Yep.
Yeah, this is the best tasting coffee. No, it's not. I'm going to sue you. Yeah. This is the brightest monitor. No, it's not. I'm going to sue you.
Yeah.
Most people are saying it's ridiculous. It's someone out to make a quick buck, hoping Apple will settle out of court and not bother going to a long, lengthy, expensive trial.
On the other hand, if it is a real problem, I mean, it could be that the driver that Apple is using, if the problem goes away when you boot XP, then the problem must be a driver issue under Apple, and they could solve it very easily.
Or XP doesn't push the graphics as hard as the Mac does because of the high-end. And that's one of the issues with the MacBook Pro is it uses the Intel 950 shared video. So it's not that good of a graphics chip to begin with.
Right.
And trying to push the fancy, in Vista, the Aero. I'd like to see someone do Vista on it with the Aero graphics and see what it looks like.
Right. That's exactly right. That's one of the things that we've been talking about at work. I've been using, under Ubuntu, I can use a product called Beryl, BERYL, and it gives me a cube, the screens, it's like four separate desktops on the faces of a cube, and you can rotate them, and things pop in and out, and it does all kinds of fancy stuff, all the ones the Mac does, and a whole bunch of others, and all the ones that Linux does, or that Vista does, and a whole bunch of others. But if you don't have a high-end graphics card, it either looks incredibly ugly or is incredibly slow or doesn't work at all or some combination of all three of those. So, it's not just I can buy this and go. But this is the problem that Apple has. When they switch to an Intel-based commodity device, they really ended up with the same kind of problems that other companies have been dealing with for years, which is the quality of the hardware isn't necessarily as good as it used to be when Apple specifically designated components.
And if you want an inexpensive computer, it's not going to...
Well, that's just it.
Yeah, it's not going to have very high-level hardware in it.
Right. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, 1180 WHAM.
11 on WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites.
It's Classic TV Theme Song Week.
It's Classic TV Theme Song Week on Soundbites. And before we get back to the phones, AMD is readying the Phenom chip. Advanced Micro Devices will make a quad-core chip for desktop PCs, replacing its venerable Athlon processor with the new Phenom design in an attempt to compete better with Intel. The chip, which was announced earlier this week, will reach stores in the second half of 2007 and share similar architecture with the Barcelona quad-core Opteron server chip AMD plans to launch in the middle of 2007. AMD surged into the market with its original Opteron server chip in 2003, but the company began to slip back again when Intel launched its quad-core Xeon and dual-core Core 2 Duo chips, which is possibly the most clumsy name I have ever heard for any kind of computer thing.
But it's copyrightable.
AMD is hoping, of course, that Barcelona will convince customers to turn away from Intel Xeon, and it's now positioning the Phenom against Intel's Core 2 Duo. The company certainly can use the help. Back in April, AMD posted a $611 million loss for the first quarter and ran so short of operating funds it announced a plan to raise $2.2 billion by selling convertible notes to institutional investors. So we'll see what happens with that. I have to say, I really like the AMD chips. I always have. And it saddens me to think that they've fallen behind so significantly. I hope they can catch up. I've got a nice dual AMD system from Dave, and I love it. It's I like the AMD chips. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dan from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dan. What's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm running a Dell computer, XP Home Edition. I'm using Internet Explorer 6 version. And in the last month, I've done a bunch of Windows updates and Java. But I've noticed a problem, and I can temporarily fix it, but I can't figure out how to fix it permanently. When I go to certain web pages, like especially local television stations in Rochester and also out of town, those pages have difficulties loading the pictures and graphics associated with that web page. Sometimes I get a blank box with a little red square in the upper left-hand corner. Right. I was told to go under Internet Options and Temporary Internet Files, delete the cookies, and then delete the files, hit OK, refresh the page, and voila, it's there. I get the graphics. I see the pictures associated with the news stories from those individual stories. Well, the problem is this. A day or two later, I'll go back to that same web page, and the same problem reoccurs. And I don't know if it's something's got to be on my end and under Internet Options, I think.
Well, I don't know if it's your fault or what it sounds like might be happening is somewhere you're going is loading some sort of JavaScript or something else that's blocking Flash. And I'm wondering if that's the problem that our earlier caller, Henry, was having as well. That's an interesting
point. Yeah, I did listen to him, and it sounded like he may have something similar to mine. But again, if you wanted to go to a local television station's webpage, right now, only because I did delete the cookies and the files this morning, the pages this morning are loading properly. Then I see the graphics, I see the pictures associated, i.e., for example, the Sabre story and the Sabre's logo. Now, if I go back to that television station's webpage tomorrow or the next day, I bet you is going to be an empty box with a little red square in the upper left-hand
because
corner.
Does
IE still have the setting on how much cash to keep? I know some of the browsers cut down on how much cash it's keeping. Say 10 sites visited or 1 meg of cash.
Yeah, let's see if we can go in here.
Does anyone...
tools, would that be under Internet Options?
Somewhere under there, yeah. Dave is trying. He's on the only machine running Windows. settings, temporary Internet settings? Yeah, so, you go.
Yeah. The amount temporary internet file size. You can sit there and change that whole how much space you want to allocate.
Where's that, gentleman?
If you go into if you go to Tools, Internet Options, and right there under the General, there's a Settings where you can delete and clear temporary internet files. You can clear the history. You can tell how much history you want to,
I've got a button checked automatically. That's for check newer versions of stored pages automatically. And then right now I see 252 MBs.
Yeah, cut that back. Basically, the temporary internet files were designed mostly for modem users who take a very long time to download the new pictures, so we'll just leave them in the cache. Mm-hmm. On broadband, two things have happened. In the intervening time, the same web page never exists again because they're so dynamic
constantly
and so changing.
Changing, yes.
And with broadband, they download so fast, it usually takes longer to check the cache. So set your cache as low as it can go and see what happens.
Yeah. We're starting to see a lot more problems with Java. That's kind of interesting. Listen, we got to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 53 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. All right, kiddies. It's that time once again. Go put on your footy jammies. Grab your teddy bear. Grab your mug of hot cocoa. Sit Indian style in a little semicircle on the floor. Because if we can slap Uncle Dave awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Heck with trying to wake me up. I'm going out on the bike. The weather's... I was just looking at the forecast for this week. It's supposed to be in the high... Boy, it's going up in the 80s.
It's going up into the 80s Wednesday and Thursday.
Definitely,
yeah.
Riding time. Yep. All right. One interesting thing, folks. And I know Steve's going to run into this quite a bit. And you might. I mean, with some of your students.
Right.
All right. They bring in a machine with Vista. And they bring in some of the other items that they had on their old XP machine. And they sit there and say, I need you to get these to work.
My scanner doesn't work. My printer doesn't work. My this doesn't
Bingo.
Work. My that doesn't work.
Bingo.
Yes, that's correct.
Yes, they don't. Thanks for coming in. Bye-bye.
And, you know, it's like, don't shoot the messenger. You know, we can only do so much. Yes, we do our darndest to try to find it. But the bottom line is, if... we can't get it to work. We can't get it to work because if there's no drivers, we just can't create one. I had one client say, well, can't you just use some other one to make it work? No.
Custom programming job, 10 grand retainer up front, please.
Yes. You know, you wanted to get
contract.
This latest and greatest
yeah.
thing because you had to have it.
Well, so now that goes back to what one of the guy earlier callers had said. He'd had his monitor for 10 years. You know, monitors pretty well will work for 10 years.
Yeah.
But you're, you know, a printer driver, you know, you're lucky to get two or three out of it sometimes.
Well,
and a lot of the companies aren't making versions of their old drivers for their old equipment because they don't want you to use your old
right.
equipment. They want you to buy new equipment.
Yeah, I mean,
less than $100 for a new printer.
Yeah, right. Well, this one was happened to be an old scanner that I was yeah. surprised that it was still working with XP.
Yeah.
It definitely isn't going to be supported, like you say, with the newer scanners out there. Now they do more and more, but they just didn't want to spend the money. That's the sad fact that you're going to have to face, that some of this other equipment just isn't going to transfer on up to the Vista machine.
We had a customer 10 years ago, you know, the Agfa Arcus was the high-end scanner we sold to all of our graphics customers. Yeah. $3,000 for this scanner. He goes to buy an equivalent scanner now, $200. Well, that can't be right. I paid $3,000. Well, an equivalent scanner today is $200. In fact, you can't buy an equivalent scanner anymore. They don't make them that bad. It was 600 DPI. You know?
I mean, it's just a fact of life, folks. And, you know, I'm sorry. You know, I'm not trying to do this to be mean or anything else. You know, we do our best to do it, but don't get mad at the... bearer of bad news because you wanted to go and get the system, just like that guy last week who I criticized for having too much free time. He had XP running on his machine, then all of a sudden his machine messed
right.
up. He wanted to put Vista on it, and I said, why? You got too much free time on your hand.
Right.
Literally, you do. But things just aren't going to work. Even new things, they're still having issues.
And that's why Dell has stopped selling Vista on most of its home low-end machines, and they've gone back to XP or even Ubuntu Unix now.
HP, we have, all of them are.
Yeah. Yep. We have a list of 107 programs that have to work in Vista before we can roll it out to the entire campus. So far, like 3 have passed, 15 have failed, a bunch of others, theoretically, the next update will fix it. It's ridiculous, but that's the way it works.
And, you know, it's just, again, not our fault. We cannot, also, this is the other. Well, how soon do you think they're going to have the drivers out? I don't know.
Wait, let me get out
they
my crystal ball.
They right. don't personally call me up and tell me, every manufacturer, when they're going to have stuff ready. And even on their website, you go to there and they say, well,
soon.
They're working.
Is,
yeah.
The best you can get is soon.
Well, how soon is it? I'm amazing,
but I'm not Kresgen.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's one of our sayings that we sometimes have at the store. You know, our crystal ball's a little foggy today.
Yeah, right.
it's just, you know.
And the reality is that we got spoiled because we've forgotten. XP's been around for how many years? And we forgot what it was like at the beginning when we bought XP and stuff didn't work.
Yeah, none of our 98 stuff would work.
Right. And now this is, XP... has been out for what, 7 years, 8 years? Because I know that they started talking about Vista 5 years ago.
Yep.
And they've taken out a lot of stuff, but they just never got around to doing all of the things that they said they were going to do, and they got it out late to the hardware companies, so they haven't had time to build drivers yet. And, of course, they're going to spend their initial time on the original drivers, or drivers for the new products, not the old products. At any rate, it's time for us to give Uncle Dave a shot, and you can put away your footy jammies, wash out your mugs, put away your teddies, and we'll be back with Uncle Dave next week.
Teddy bears?
I was going to say, put away your teddies.
I had forgotten just how deeply entrenched in the gutter you people were. Uncle Dave's already left the room.
We don't want to see Uncle Dave in a teddy, I'm not going to lie.
We're not there for that. We're going to take a quick break. The mighty Glenn Lammers is back. He's back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank heaven to give you the news, the sports, the weather, all the important things that you listen to Wham for. On the other side of all of that, we'll be back with more of your phone calls, more of your questions, a lot more news, way more confusion on our parts. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You are listening to Sound Bites. This is 1180 WHAM.
Thousand-watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Every week on the Soundbites website, we do a poll. That's soundbites.org. Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Last week's poll was about lockups with Windows Update. We had a story about that in the news. 270 of you voted, making it number 215 on the all-time hit list. Actually tied for 214. Thank you very much. The question was, I have had lockups with Windows Update, and 45% of you said not yet, 36% of you said, oh, heck yeah, 9% of you voted for Linux, 7% of you voted for the Macintosh, and 11 of you said, I don't update. Okay, then, this week's poll is about a very interesting story in the news. The Outlaw Consulting did a trusted brand survey among young U.S. consumers. The most trusted brand name in America, Apple. The firm released this year's list of top 15 trusted U.S. brands among young Americans, and Apple leads the pack. And this isn't just computer people. This is, in fact, they're the only one in the whole top 15 that's a computer thing. Apple was the foremost brand. Number two was Trader Joe. Three was JetBlue. Four was In-N-Out Burger. We don't even have one of those around here. And five was Ben & Jerry's.
Not even familiar with Trader Joe.
I know about Trader Joe. It's a food.
There was Fishy Joe in Futurama.
Never mind. So the question is, whom do you trust? And the choices are Apple. This is in alphabetical order, folks. I don't get all nuts. At least up to a point. Apple, Dell, IBM, local vendors, Ubuntu, which is Canonical, some other Linux, something else, or nobody. So far, we have had 71 people vote, and the overwhelming choice is nobody. 48% of the vote so far, followed by Apple, local vendors, Ubuntu, some other Linux, something else, Dell, and IBM, a measly one vote. So please vote for who you trust. When you're done with that, take a look at the little yellow box underneath. Click on Give Us Your Opinion. That will take you to my website, asknick.com.
That's AskNick.com. That's AskNick.com.
Jeez and crackers. Whoa. What?
Glad I didn't have to hold my breath on that one.
Holy cow. I know that there are certain chemical substances that will slow down your reflexes, but jeez and crackers. 20 minutes? Unbelievable. All right. That will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Thank you. Where you can enter a complete opinion about who you trust and why you trust whom you trust. And while you're there, check out my forums. Check out my newsletter. I put out a newsletter with tips and tricks and rants and raves and website of the week and answering computer questions and all that other hoo-ha. So you can do all of that. And then, of course, come back
hoo-ha.
And check out the Soundbites website in all its glory. In the meantime, we are going to go back to the phones. And our next caller is Brian from North Java, New York.
Yep.
And that's in Wyoming County, Brian?
That is correct. It's North Java.
I've got a friend that lives in North Java.
North Java.
We've got two friends yep. that live in North Java now.
We go to the we go to the Railroad Museum in North Java.
Very cool.
Yep. And it's pronounced Java.
That is correct. Well, all the locals anyways.
Sure. Well, that's all that counts.
Like Leroy right. or Leroy or Chai Lai or Chili.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't want to go there.
So what's your story here, Brian?
Okay, what I have is a laptop that I use to do sound effects for Little League Baseball.
Cool.
And I've got a program called Sports Sounds Pro or something like that, and it puts this matrix up on the screen with, you know, you can instantly access all of the sounds you need. They're all WAV files. I run that from the headphone jack of the laptop into an amplifier. Now, when I'm not playing one of the sound effects, in between sound effects or whatever, or as they transition from one to the other, I'm getting this annoying hum.
Yep, the 60 hertz ground loop hum.
Okay.
Your devices aren't grounded either to ground or to each other properly.
Okay, how do I solve it? Because I noticed
ground them.
All right, because if I unplug...
He needs more information. Help the
You need, you need to make sure you have the three-pronged outlet.
Yes, I do.
And the outlet you're plugging into is properly grounded.
Okay.
And many times you need to ground the devices together, just run a conductor between the two, some metal surface on both of them. So they're grounded to each other as well.
Well, but
to the
both
ground.
Devices have to have the three-prong plug, right? Both the amp and the laptop.
Right.
If they have a three-prong plug.
And a lot of laptops don't.
Right.
Oh, okay. That could be it. Because I noticed if I unplug the power supply to the laptop and run on battery, it goes away totally.
Yep.
Okay. Very good. I've got this. I had a similar problem at work. Whenever I turned my computer on at work, I could not listen to 1180, which was a disaster, obviously.
Obviously.
Yep.
So I called the local computer guy, and he said he sold me this little thing that plugs into the wall, and then they plug the computer into that. And that seemed to solve that problem at work, but I tried that same thing on the laptop and my amp setup, and that didn't seem to help at all.
You may need to get a ground tester. It's like 10 bucks or 5 bucks at an electronics company, mm-hmm. and make sure that the outlet you're plugging into is, in fact, grounded.
Okay.
Right, because that's out at the Little League field, right?
Yeah. That is correct.
Yeah, who knows what happened there.
It may have three prongs on it, but that ground prong may not be connected to anything.
Very good.
And that has to be dealt with by a real electrician.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a city or county or state or whatever.
You take a 10-foot metal pole and pound it into the ground, and there you have a ground.
Right.
Well, right. But there's your problem, and there's your fix.
And I ground it to the backstop. Just don't let the kids touch it behind the plate. Those poles go in the ground.
They probably go down far enough. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay,
so you're grounded to it. Yeah. I've seen the guys at some of the local recording studios spend days tearing their board apart trying to find where that hum is coming from. And they've got,
it doesn't know the music. Yeah. It doesn't know the words.
Right. Yeah. The 100-channel mixer boards with millions of little knobs on them, and they just rip everything up. All the raised floors with the wires around. Just tear it to pieces. Where's that hum coming from?
Right.
All right.
Good luck, Brian. And good luck. What's the name of your team?
The Sheldon Reds.
Go Reds.
Leading the division right now, I might add.
That's what I like to hear.
Okay.
All right. Go Reds. Our next. Because you can't root for the Sabres anymore, so go Reds! Our next caller is Paul from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Paul. What's your question?
Well, I'm a writer, a fiction writer,
ooh.
And I write a lot of words per day.
Right.
I bought a Dell laptop And it didn't cost me a ton of money, but still, you know, six bills is six bills. Right. I can't use the computer outside. I can't see the screen outside. Yeah. I turn it away from the sun. I turn it this way and that way. It's driving me nuts, right. And the thing is no good to me.
There are companies that sell laptop hoods. We'll have one posted in the link in a minute. But what a lot of people end up doing is just get a piece of cardboard and create a sunscreen over top of the laptop.
It's a problem that a lot of people have. Unless you have a super bright screen.
Yeah.
And even then, it's going to wash out, but it's not. It hopefully won't wash out quite as much.
Same thing on cell phones, too.
Yep.
Because I was trying to make a phone call last night, and I couldn't because I couldn't see the screen.
I have at work, this is obviously not, they don't belong to me. I have at work several different models of several different laptops. Some of them are pretty good. Some of them are horrible. None of them
are
great.
There you go. Yes. Yes, indeed. I bought one online from, I don't know, some computer company. I felt like it was in the 1850s taking a picture.
Sure. Some of them are fully enclosed like that, where you stick your face down into it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Hoodman is the big company making those, but there's several other ones that do the same thing.
Yeah,
wouldn't
unfortunately,
it seem logical that somebody, one of these techno geniuses, would figure out a screen that you can just kind of put on there so you can see.
Well, they have it. They have paper white screens. It's called e-ink.
And
Steve can even put up a link for that. But
$2,000?
Right. The problem is the cost of that screen. They're coming down as they become more common. The Sony e-book reader has one that's the size of a paperback book, and that's $800 just for that. And that's just for an e-book reader, and most of that cost is in the screen, literally. So, you know, by the time you get that up to the size of a laptop, there's your $2,000 right there.
Yeah.
Plus the rest of the computer. So,
which is silly,
Well, but that's coming down. I think in a few years, you know, the next time you're ready to buy a laptop, you'll be able to use it outside and have as much fun as you want. But right now, unfortunately, you're kind of semi-stuck with what you've got.
Yeah, the Hoodman company.
Thank you. I enjoy your show weekly, and thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Paul, and good luck with the writing. I don't want your last name. We don't need to have 100 million people knowing who you are, but are you published?
We lost him already.
We lost him already. Oh, okay. He went away.
We're seeing a lot of novelists starting to release, or even short stories, releasing on podcasts.
Sure.
And you get an audience out, and then you go to a book publisher and say, you know, I've got 10,000 people listening to my book. Why don't you print it?
Yeah. That works. All right. Our next caller is Gary from Greece, New York. Welcome, Gary. What's your question?
My computer just blew up. It started to smoke. I'm just wondering probably could be the power supply.
It could easily be.
Yeah,
depends.
It looks like the fan is stuck or something. But my question is, the thing is 6 years old. And am I better off buying a new one?
Yes.
Trying to fix it?
Oh no. Yeah, it's absolutely time to move on, Gary.
Unless you want to use that one for the kids or
a doorstop, or if you own a boat, make a great anchor. But other than that, not a lot you're going to be able to get out of it.
Any ideas of what's the best to get?
Yes, I would suggest going either to Dave Enright or to Steve Ray and having them custom build a machine for you.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
The big question is, how do you define best?
That's my point.
Where are you located, Dave?
Yeah. Right.
I'm 70 Empire Boulevard.
What is it?
70 Empire Boulevard.
Near Culver.
Yep. We're just a half a mile up from Dan's Crafts.
Okay.
Near St. Ambrose Church.
And Steve?
We're in Victor, just off of Route 96 on 251.
Which, by the way, will soon be Peace of Christ at St. Ambrose. They're changing the whole. Anyway, we got to take a break. Back in just a couple minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Call Wham now at 2.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundboy by the heaven. Notice how suddenly I've lost the will to live, apparently, right in the middle of the show. I don't quite know what happened there. I do know, however, I've gained my will to live again because Apple has received the required approval from the Federal Communications Commission for the upcoming iPhone. The green light, which is a standard certification process that any cellular phone must receive before it can be sold in the U.S. market, means that the iPhone's launch can now proceed as planned. A spokesman for AT&T Singular said we're on track to release it in late June. Nothing has changed. The iPhone combines a cell phone with Apple's market-leading iPod media player. It washes your dishes, and it will clean your hubcaps and sports a touchscreen display. It's been the talk of the industry since Apple chief executive Steve Jobs unveiled it in January and gave a preview of its features. Many analysts, going with the majority, predict that the sleek gizmo will be another hit product for Apple. Its pending arrival helped drive Apple stock to record highs in recent weeks. The only, of course, bad possible note is the length of life for the battery before you have to do a recharge. I've said this 100 times. I hope battery life is absolutely horrendously bad. I hope the battery life is so horribly bad that the iPod doesn't sell well. Why? Because Steve Jobs will then put a team of people on the battery problem and fix all the battery problems we've ever had. That's my hope.
A lot of the industry analysts are saying what a marketing coup this was for Apple to announce a product 6 months before it shipped and still generate this much press buzz.
Not just this much press buzz, but this much ongoing press buzz instead of, you know, like a peak and then it died out. It keeps getting higher and higher and higher as we get closer to the product itself.
They've also been speculating that that's why Apple hasn't announced really any other products yet. They just raised the clock speeds of their MacBooks last week, but that's almost no big deal.
Right.
They haven't announced anything else because they don't want to steal the thunder of the iPod.
Right. After June, we'll probably see whatever's next.
Yeah.
But Apple's just going to ride this wave till it's done. And I hope, like I said, I hope the battery life is horrible. and it's only because I selfishly want better batteries. Our next caller is Jason on a cell phone. Welcome, Jason. What's your question?
Hey, how's it going?
Peachy, how are you?
Good. Well, I heard the guy that was having trouble with the grounding problem when he does the sound effects for the baseball game.
Right, Brian from North Java. Go Reds.
Right, exactly. Well, I'm a performing artist, and I perform everywhere, and I have a similar problem, and the easiest way to solve it is with a small $1 ground lift, which is like a little gray thing that you plug your three-prong thing into that just changes it to two-prong and thereby canceling out the three-prong to two-prong problem.
So removing the ground.
Yeah, it sounds ridiculous, but it works every time. And I know as soon as he called, I knew exactly what he was talking
about.
That's
not really good for the equipment to unground it.
You'd be
better grounding both than you would ungrounding
one.
Yeah,
given a choice, you should ground both.
But, I mean, this is like a $1 thing, and I mean, the chances of something going wrong and, you know, actually...
Yeah. So no one ever uses.
Well, now, Jason, hold on. For you, maybe not a problem of things going wrong. Brian's outdoors.
Right. Yeah. And sometimes I am too.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a professional juggler, fire eater. I perform basically wherever they pay me to go. So
having an ungrounded device is the least of his worries.
Yeah, exactly. Smowing. Yeah, I juggle flames and buzzsaws. What the heck? So I got something ungrounded. Yep. Who cares?
Exactly.
But the other thing is, no one ever uses those ungrounders properly. They all have that little metal thing at the bottom.
Yeah. They snip that off.
Well, yeah, you're supposed to screw that into the wall plate, which is theoretically grounded, before we had the actual third prong for ground.
Right.
No one ever bothers with that. So that's supposed to let you ground an ungrounded device that doesn't have the third prong.
Right.
But no one uses that little screw.
Right.
Oh, we all understand that. We just want to solve the problem as fast as possible.
Right. Okay. That's exactly right. That's very funny.
That little sucker on there, and it works. I'm sure he's plugging his laptop into an extension cord or something like that.
Right.
And he just puts it on the end of whatever's three-pronged. He'll solve it. Really
I've watched
quick.
People specifically buy ultra-thin extension cord things so that they can plug it in with that third prong hanging off the edge.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I understand what you're going for. And I have to tell you, I envy you as a juggler. I can do balls. I cannot do clubs. I don't know what it is. I can't get clubs.
Yeah, it's just a little more practice and less social life than you already had.
Yeah! So that's I'm not sure I've got any left to give up, Jason. All right, thank you so much. I love it when people call in and give answers for other people. Yep. Thank you so very much.
There was a neat commercial on Sci-Fi Channel with for Sci-Fi Channel with a juggler on it, and he's juggling a bowling ball and a chainsaw and this and then that. And then during one loop, he rips his head off and starts juggling his head.
I've seen that one, right. Our next caller is Barry from Pittsburgh, New York. Welcome, Barry. What's your question?
Hi, folks. I can't top that juggling. I can't even juggle my email sometimes.
Yeah, I can't even juggle my checkbook.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
Hey, I have two Toshiba G15 laptops, and one, and they're different ages but the same model. One of them has a battery that does not last as long as the other one.
Right.
And what I did is I tested both batteries, and one of them, the good one, that'll run 45 minutes to an hour on its battery. The other one stays at 80-90% for about 15 minutes, and then within 5 minutes, boom, it's just dropped right off.
Yep.
Now, I looked online to buy a new battery, and I want to get a really good one, and I see them ranging all the way from $49 to $149, and I see Toshiba's original one right in the middle of the pack at about $100, but I'm seeing some bad reviews on them. Any help with how I get the best battery that for a replacement for this machine?
There's a couple of issues you want to keep keep in mind. One is that the battery is a chemical device and it will eventually wear out. They're good for a certain number of recharge cycles, and then they just won't hold the charge anymore. So that's always going to happen.
Also, the warranty that'll come with this battery.
Yeah, check the warranty. The more expensive ones may have a longer warranty. But the other issue is how many milliamp hours it has or how many watts it has in it.
Well, all the ones I'm looking at are 1,400 milliamp hours.
Yeah, usually the more expensive ones you'll find will be like 2,000 or 2,500, and they will give you a longer battery life. And that's usually how they're marketed, more expensive for a longer life.
It may well just be that you're looking at two different manufacturers who charge two different prices for essentially the same thing. If they have essentially the same specs and they have the same warranty,
go with the cheap one. But what you got to compare, though, is the specs to make sure you know you're matching apples for apples.
And I am doing that, matching the specs up.
Yep. Sometimes too cheap is bad because then it's a poorer quality of product. And you know it's great that it has a 3-year warranty, but if you have to get a new battery every 3 months because the old one broke.
Right. Yeah.
Well, what do you think about a real Toshiba brand versus second market?
They're buying them from some other place, too. Toshiba doesn't make the batteries. They just wind up having some other third-party company package them up and put their logo on it.
Yeah, sometimes you can see the company brand or logo on the battery itself, and then buy it direct from them.
Yeah,
okay. Good.
But it's this the same with any laptop battery that you can buy an OEM battery from that company. You can find third party batteries. A lot of times you'll find third party batteries with higher wattage in them, so they'll last a little longer. But it's tough knowing which is the best. You buy a couple and see which one works better.
My feeling is I buy about 2/3 of the way up the scale and hope.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want too cheap. You don't want too expensive. So right in the middle, 2/3, that's a good place.
That's our guess. All right. Our next caller is Bob from Penfield, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Well, I've got a Dell desktop. My grandkids have worked the monitor connector back and forth until it finally broke on the motherboard, and I can replace it. The problem is I can't find the bracket that holds the half of the connector that's on the motherboard.
You're able to resolder all those pins down to the motherboard?
Well, it's not. It's just the bracket itself. The answer is yes. Yeah.
Wow.
Leave
us your name and number. We'll probably hire you.
Yeah. If this is a desktop, you're either connected to one of two things. You're either connected to a video card that's built into the motherboard or a video card that's plugged into the motherboard. In either case, you can replace that with a different plug-in video card.
No. This is I see.
Right. Yeah, video cards range anywhere from $15 up to $700. So pick something somewhere in the middle and buy yourself a video card and unplug the old one, plug in the new one, you're done.
But for finding brackets like that, you can try Goldcrest Electronics. Goldcrest used to be really, they had this huge warehouse on St. Paul everyone was into tinkering with electronics, and that's a dying
industry.
Well,
it's so cheaper. It's so much cheaper to buy it on the internet.
Many of them come with blank, the full blank thing. And if you've got a Dremel, you can...
Never mind. Please. The question
one of the guys
you,
who works for me does that all the time. Whenever I see him bringing his Dremel in, I get nervous. I have no idea what he's about, but I know it's going to be dangerous.
Well, what's that big electronic? Is it MSI? We've got one at my office. We've got this like 500-page electronics catalog that's you could imagine.
Yeah. Now, is this the video on the motherboard or a video card?
It's on the motherboard.
Then just get a video card.
Plug it in. Go into the BIOS.
Right.
No, you won't even have to. Well, you might have to plug it in.
But yeah, generally speaking, when you plug it in, it just takes over. And then let that go, and let that be your video card, and then you don't have to get all nuts, and you don't have to worry about it.
Although he might like to tinker. He might be one of us old schoolers that still likes to tinker with a soldering
iron.
If you
like to, God bless you.
But if he gets electrocuted, I don't want to be responsible.
Yeah, $15 I can get another card.
Well, you might spend a little more and get a slightly higher end video card than that, but you can get them fairly inexpensively. All right, our next, we got time? Yeah, we got plenty of time. Our next caller is Lance on a cell phone. Welcome, Lance. What's your question?
Yeah, quick question first. Windows XP on an Acer laptop, should I accept Java Update offered online?
Probably.
Yeah.
The Java, it's those tough questions. Some of the updates
depends.
Break other things. But the Java update will let you run more Java applications might get on web pages.
If you're sure it's coming from Sun, absolutely. Absolutely update it.
Yeah, that's
I'll let it comes when I turn on Thunderbird. My next question is on Thunderbird.
Yeah.
I updated to the latest version, and I lost my visual alert when messages come in. And I have two accounts, and I discovered 5 unread messages on the second account because I didn't see a visual update. Is there any way to correct that?
It's usually a preference, isn't it?
Yeah, generally speaking, if you right-click on any mailbox, like your inbox, and select properties, one of the choices is check for mail every X minutes. And if that's turned off, you won't get a visual alert.
No, I get an audible alert.
Bing.
But it doesn't tell me which.
Sometimes it's a preference under that. Check for mail every X minutes. Display a message when new mail arrives.
But I think he says he's getting
there. I'll give it another try. I did check somewhere that gave me the option of a visual alert and. It's been checked for a long time, but it doesn't help.
Turn it off. Quit Thunderbird. Relaunch Thunderbird. Turn it back on.
No, leave it off and send yourself some messages. I've seen several people, if both the sound and the alert are checked, they get no visual alerts and only sounds. If they turn off the visual alert, they get both.
Oh.
I don't know why. It's got to be somebody put a zero where a one belongs somewhere in the code. Try that. See what happens. Let us know.
You get one or the other, but not both if they're both checked.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Weird.
Hey.
Right. Try that and let us know. Seriously, let us know because...
then we can pass it on.
We'd love to be able to pass that on. Thanks. All righty. We still have time? Oh, look, we got all kinds of time. Our next caller is Mark from Rush, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's your question?
Hey, I got a question. I got a PictureMate little personal photo lab for Christmas. It's an Epson, a little 4x6 printer.
Oh, yep. Sure.
Yeah, we saw those. They're really cool.
Yeah, I love it, and it works on my laptop just fine. But when I plug it into my home computer, which is running Windows 2000 Professional, it does not recognize it when I plug it in. It's because it's got a USB.
Yep.
Yeah.
But when I unplug it, it whines and moans. Hey, you just unplugged this. But I cannot for the life of me get...
Well, it recognized that you plugged something in, but it
USB
can't...
USB device in.
But there's no driver for it, so it's ignoring it.
Yeah, I've loaded the driver that came with it.
Well, Windows 2000 had USB problems, and I'm checking our list. I think years ago we had a list of USB fix for Windows 2000.
Yeah.
Oh,
great.
That's a possibility, but the driver that you loaded, is it a Windows 2000 driver?
Yeah, it's what it says on the disk from Epson.
Oh, it does. It says Windows 2000.
Mm-hmm. You may want to go to their website, see if there's a different version, a newer version for 2000.
You go to Epson, you mean?
Yeah.
You might see if there's, like you say, I think there is an update for Windows 2000. Windows 2000 originally had some issues with USB, like Windows 98.
Yeah. Right, so Steve's going to check the thing, but you could check it as well. It's at soundbites.org. And check our list of questions and sites that we've got on the show. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's 1180. It's WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. All right, before we get back to the phones, Engadget.
This was a great story.
Engadget had a story indicating that Apple's iPhone and the Mac OS X Leopard operating system would be delayed. Apple's market value dropped $4 billion in a day.
In a few minutes.
In a few minutes, and took the rest of the day to recover. Engadget maintains that the facts for the story came from a trusted source inside the company. As it turns out, it was fake.
And now that person no longer works at Apple, I bet.
I'll bet if it did come from inside, then that person no longer works at Apple. But basically what they said was the iPhone would be indefinitely delayed. The next iteration of the Mac OS X operating system would be delayed. And
The iPhone was October and the Leopard was going to be pushed till next year. Something like that.
Oh, that's right. It was the Leopard, which was indefinitely delayed and hopefully next year. And it went on and on about how Apple quality takes time and blah, 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 blah. And it snowballed. And what's interesting, of course, Apple has always used internet buzz to build up stuff that they want. And now they're finding the dark side of that particular force. The Engadget is kind of unrepentant.
They issued a retraction 20 minutes later, but the damage had already been done.
Right. And the retraction basically said, "Well, apparently this was false, but we did get it from what we thought was a reliable source."
Yeah. And they think the FCC approval is what was able to help Apple stock rebound as fast as it did.
Right.
And whether that was planned or not. And people are calling for an SEC investigation. Did someone leak this so they could short sell and then buy it back again? Yeah. And then a couple of other news sites were talking about. In the olden days, big papers, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, things like that, would sometimes print false rumors too, but they're a little harder about checking their facts when you don't have to publish for, say 12 more hours. It's in tomorrow's paper. It's easier to check your facts.
Right.
But then it took them a day. It was a whole day to print the retraction.
Right.
And these guys came out in 20 minutes and were able to say, yeah, that was wrong. And just the speed of everything that happens is just ridiculous.
Well, and that's part of the problem. Because everything is so fast on the internet, you want to be the first one with the scoop.
Yep.
Nobody vets their stories anymore. Nobody turns around and says.
In fact, some of the rumor sites they specifically say, we don't care the source of the rumor. We're going to print it.
Right.
Yeah. And they interviewed one guy who sold 5 million shares of Apple stock and was really, really mad. And we're thinking, idiot.
Yeah.
One, I wish I had 5 million shares of Apple stock.
Yeah, right.
An idiot. A rumor on a blog and you sell?
Yeah, right. Right. All right. Our next caller is John from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, John. What's up?
Hello, Nick and guys. My name is John. I want to comment on the guy that wants to run his computer to the sound system at the baseball field.
Right.
Never, 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 never mix electricity and outdoor being outside. Never, never, never unground your equipment.
Yeah.
Because, the problem is it only takes a very small amount of current to kill you. In fact, the guy should be running his system on a ground fault circuit interrupter.
Right.
And then ground his equipment together, because all it takes is something small to go wrong, and the guy's in a lot of trouble. That's all I have to say, guys.
No, you're absolutely right, John. Thank you very much.
On a ground mat, maybe, so you're grounded against the computer, too.
Right, right. No, he's absolutely right. I think that's an excellent point. We should have made it much more clear. Thank you.
Although, as we were playing croquet one day, I went to the International Lewis Carroll Kestrel Croquet Tournament in Vermont.
Ooh.
And one of the guys wouldn't play because in the next valley over, there was a thunderstorm.
What, and he had a metal mallet?
No, wouldn't.
He just had a metal pole shoved down through the top of his hat, or what?
But it was in the next valley over. It never even made it to us.
Yeah, right.
All right,
our next caller is Paul from Dansville, New York. Welcome, Paul. What's your question?
Thanks a lot for taking my call. You guys have had been a wonderful help to me over the years. I love your show.
Thank you.
I've
got two computers, both running XP. They're desktop computers, and I've networked them, one talks to the other just fine, but the other one doesn't. It's a new desktop Hewlett Packard. Doesn't see the old one. The old one sees the new one.
So you got them labeled in the same work group?
Yep.
And you got sharing set up on both?
Yes, I do.
Do you have something shared on each?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, you actually have to mark a folder to share to the network, because there's sharing inside that computer to other usernames. There's a second sharing option for the network. And what was that other trick we ran? Oh, the description.
Yeah. Don't leave anything.
Well, yeah, leave in your computer name where you set the name and the work group and the description. Delete the description field. We've seen problems with that with older machines not working for no apparent reason if there's something in the description field.
But he's saying this is two new machines running XP.
No, one old, one new.
Oh, that was both XP.
Well, they're both running XP, but one old, one new.
Yeah.
Yeah, try it, see.
Yeah.
Try it.
If there's something there, take it out. If there isn't anything there, put something in.
There you go. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Lint, and me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 50 minutes after the hour, and nobody expects a Spanish Inquisition on Soundbites at 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 54 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites.
And the sultry Joan Jett.
Nick, you know, come on. You used to jam out to this music.
Constantly. I used to get down and get funky. Then I'd get up and take a shower. Before we get back to the phones, I'm sure some of you have noticed that Google has changed their front page. They moved one line of links.
They moved a line. It's no big change.
Oh, you have no idea how much buzz there is on the net for that. But what they really have done is revamped their search engine. Now you can, any search you get will integrate video, books, maps, and news into one universal online result. Google spent 2 years transforming the architecture of its search engine to broaden results to include web pages that one had to previously seek out in separate search categories such as photos and news. It's all stuff on the web, said Google's Vice President of Search Products and User Experience, Marissa Mayer. The assumption is that if it's there and it's findable on the web, we should get it. The universal search platform delivers more comprehensive results and raises the profile of Google features such as online books and video, according to co-founder Sergey Brin. In a way, it's a doubled reward because it gives more exposure to our other features such as books. It's a little bit of a shame that until now they were underutilized.
The real disconcerting thing about to some people about Google is that if you have a Google account, when you log into your account, it will remember all of your searches that you've ever searched for going back for years.
Sure.
That's kind of neat. Until the police come along and ask for it.
Well, yeah, right. I don't know if you can get rid of that. I have a couple of different Google accounts. I'll have to see if there's a way to, and I don't care. You can take a look at everything I've searched for. It's nothing bad, but that's all right. All right, our next caller is Tim from Clarence, New York. Welcome, Tim. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Great show.
Tim, the Enchanter.
I have a Toshiba laptop with no serial port, and I've purchased a vehicle diagnostic software, hardware system that requires a serial port. They supplied me with a PCM CIA card to serial converter, but when I install it, it installs as port 8, and on their software, it only gives me a choice of port 1 to port 4, and I've been searching for weeks trying to find a solution for this, and I'm out of...
Yeah, there probably isn't one. If you go in, you might be able to go into the driver for that card and change it to port 1, 2, 3, or 4.
Yeah.
But those are typically reserved ports by Windows. And any
1, 2, and 3.
Right. Any additional serial ports you add come in as other numbers. So either the diagnostic software has to change in order to see port 8, or the driver for the card has to change to say port 8. And either way, it's nothing you can do.
Yeah, no. Especially in plug and play.
Yeah. Now, that's interesting, a laptop with no serial ports. I haven't seen those lately.
It's getting to where serial ports and even printer ports.
Yeah, parallel's gone. Everybody's going USB.
Everything is going SATA.
I'm sorry. You're going to have to talk to them about that. That really is a question that you have to get from your vehicle software people. They've got to have a fix for that. They gave you all the pieces. There's got to be something in the manual that tells you what to do. Our next caller is David from Rochester, New York. Welcome, David. What's your question?
My question quickly is, I keep hearing you advertising DSL for Frontier, and I currently have Roadrunner, and it sounds like a significant savings for me if I were to convert. What am I going to lose in terms of speed?
Nothing.
Nothing.
It's all very relative. If you look at the raw numbers, Frontier is 6 megabit, Roadrunner is 10 megabit, so Roadrunner sounds faster. But it all depends on where you are. With Frontier DSL, there's an issue with how far you are from the phone switch. The farther you are, the slower it gets. And with Roadrunner, the more people in your neighborhood on Roadrunner, the slower it gets. So
once you get out on the internet, you're at the speed that server will serve you content anyway, which I'll guarantee you is always slower than your optimal speed.
I see.
I'm on 100 megabit per second line, and if I'm off campus...
Fine.
Thank you. If I'm off campus, my speed is no faster than my 6 megabit DSL. Absolutely no faster at all, because it's whatever speed that thing is. It has nothing to do with you. So either one will give you, in terms of the general internet experience, a great experience. DSL is an awfully good deal, and as we keep saying, we're on it. It's a good thing. Listen, we're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. Next week, call earlier, call often. We'll be back next week at the same time on this same channel with a whole lot more sound bites. I'm Nick Francesco with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton. And we will be back, like I said, next Sunday. Don't forget to join us in the forums on the Soundbites website. We talk to each other. We answer questions. We have a lot of fun. And we'll be back as soon as we can see you at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Online.